This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 203, where AC and I catch up on a bit of banter, some news, and talk to Paul Stubbs about Microsoft Artificial Intelligence, recorded live July the 6th, 2017. Give CodeShip Pro a try. More teams than ever are using Docker and Linux for their .NET applications. CodeShip Pro is a fully customizable, continuous integration and delivery service in the cloud with the best support for any team that is using .NET and Docker together and can run builds on Linux environments. CodeShip Pro comes with ready-to-use integrations for Azure, including Azure Container Services, and more. It also offers a free, convenient local CLI tool that allows you to run your builds locally and is the only hosted CI/CD that lets you build your own environment, giving you the most control and flexibility no matter what tool or stack you're trying to use. Check out CodeShip Pro's free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. Open source projects are always free on CodeShip. Visit CodeShip.com today or check out CodeShip.com/features/pro to learn more. AC.
CJ.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How about yourself?
I'm okay. It's summer has finally arrived in Seattle. So things are looking up.
Is it hot over there?
Well, define hot. It's all relative, baby.
I guess that's true. Yeah. It's pretty damn hot over here. We're topping out like in the mid-90s Fahrenheit over here in Florida these days. How are you guys over there in Seattle?
It's gotten up into the late 80s, which is kind of approaching 30 degrees, I think, Celsius, for those of you in metric. So it's, but it's pretty toasty for Seattle. Of course, everybody here goes all year complaining about the cold, and then the sun arrives and everybody complains about the heat, so it's pretty funny.
Just a bunch of bitching and moaning, huh?
Basically, yeah. That's definitely fair to say. Anyway, what's been going on with you, my friend?
Oh man, been busy. I guess this week I got a new laptop.
Ooh,
I got
one of the, it arrived, huh?
It arrived. I got one of the new MacBook Pro 15-inch machines with the Kaby Lake chip in it. This is the longest I've gone without buying a new laptop. So my old one was a 3.5, almost 4-year-old MacBook Pro. And I was on the fence. I don't know if we had talked about it on the show. I know we talked about it offline where I would love to have a smaller machine, but just with the video work that I do, I didn't want to go with a 13-inch MacBook because it didn't have the discrete graphics and it only had a dual core. But this has been a nice surprise on the size difference. It is about a centimeter less wide than my old laptop, a centimeter less deep, not a full centimeter, but pretty close. And then the thickness is, if I took the screen off the LCD off my old laptop, that's how thick the new laptop is.
Jeez, that's thin.
Yeah, it's nice, but I'm experiencing the whole, you know, only USB-C connectors on it, which I gotta say, it's not that bad. I mean, I bought a dongle that's got nice port replicator kind of thing. It's got three USBs, an HDMI, SD card, Ethernet, power, everything. So I have sitting on my desk and I just plug one thing in and everything's, it's like a little dock. So it's even a better story than I used to have.
Yeah, gotcha.
But I like it, man. It's pretty nice.
That's cool. Pretty nice. That's a pretty sweet upgrade.
Yeah, it was a pretty significant upgrade. It was a, I was not in the mood to do it right now, but I didn't really have a choice. My old laptop, the video RAM is on the fritz, and it makes it really hard to build a video course on SharePoint framework development.
When your video card gives out on you? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little tricky, man. It's quite a bit tricky, but at any rate.
Yeah, that's...
How about you?
Well, I finally got my Saturn V Lego set built after the shenanigans that we went through with that, which is really cool. Great set. And I did some of it. My son did most of it. And he had an absolute blast doing it. And man, oh man, you see the pictures of people holding it, like you holding it and things? You're like, wow, that's a big set. And then you build it and you're like, oh, shit, that's a really big set. It's different in person. It's huge. It's just gigantic. And it was really fun to build.
What did you think about the build quality? Like how you build like an inner shell and then you build the outside to it?
You know, I spent half the time thinking, who came up with this?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody really clever came up with how all of the internals are built and how the structure is built because it's sturdy.
That's what got me is it's the way it's done with that internal and external shell is how this thing that will not fall apart.
It's also odd because Lego is generally not circular. Like it's little blocks, right? And so making a circular tube is kind of surprisingly difficult, but they've done a bang up job of like, of making it very rocket-like on the outside, even though it's made out of blocks on the inside. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally do.
I know it sounds kind of silly, but it's really nicely done.
Did you see it was a Lego Ideas thing, and there was a bit where the Saturn V is a Lego Ideas, whereas for those of you who don't know, it's a user-submitted thing, and then the community kind of gets together and votes on it, and once it gets a certain number of votes, then Lego pays attention and says, hey, we may do this as an official set, and that's what they did with the Saturn V. Someone has already come up and proposed, and it's got a ridiculous number of votes where they've got the umbilical tower that will go with the Saturn, with the Saturn V rocket, so that you'll be able to see, you'll have, both pieces kind of side by side.
Yeah, I think every owner of the Saturn V Lego set is kind of one of those. And what I would really like is the full Technics, like style crawler built for it. So the crawler that took the shuttle out was obviously it's the same crawler that took the Saturn V out. In fact, that's what it was built for. And so they're still being used to this day. And it's going to be used for SLS as well. But there was a guy, I saw a video, YouTube video of a dude who spent, I think, 3 or 4, maybe 5 years building this just incredible, fully motorized, self-leveling crawler as well. And I would love one of those. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And I could drive the Saturn V around the house and really piss the kids off and the wife and stuff. It'd be awesome.
Then we need to do, I'd love to have that as well. Then we need the VAB so that we can have the rocket put on the crawler, drive it out of the VAB and then up to the umbilical tower.
That's true.
I think it works. I think Lego should just go all in on this.
Yeah. If I ever want a divorce, I will start building that.
So, it was funny too, because the last episode we did, we talked about our challenges with shipping, of me trying to ship you the box, the Saturn V, over to you. And I think it was later that afternoon is when everything kind of got sorted, and it ended up that you want to tell everybody like what happened with that?
Yeah. So the guy arrives finally with the box, and he comes in, he's like, oh yeah, do you want it? I'll put it down over here. And I said, so what happened? And he's like, he looked really sheepish at me and was like, yeah, I took it to the wrong building. And it turns out he took it to 3000 Northrop Way or something, which is a completely different building, street, area of town that I'm not in. And it should have come to 3000 Carillon Point, which is where our office is. But yeah, he just saw the 3000, and most of the mail delivered to that is, or addressed to anything 3000 on his run, goes to this particular building that he delivered to. So it was a genuine mistake at the end of the day on his part. But yeah, he looked pretty embarrassed about the whole thing. But fortunately, the company it was delivered to didn't have a Chris Johnson or a Hyperfish working for them. So they decided to return it, and that's how it ended up back at FedEx and then ultimately back to me, I should say. So now we've got to run the gauntlet of getting it back to you after my back order having also arrived. So we've still got to get, the road is not completely clear just yet.
No, it's not. And neither one of us have a whole lot of confidence in sending it back via FedEx.
No, not so much.
But at any rate.
Exactly.
Good
hey,
fun.
So we thought we'd cover a little bit of news, a tiny little bit of news. We did a news show last week. We've got a great interview with Paul Stubbs coming up later in the show. But before we dive into that, we thought we'd do a little bit of an update on where we're at, where you and I are at sort of professionally with our professional day-to-day ventures, I suppose, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And then a little bit on SPFX from you, and then we'll dive into some quick news items and then move on to Paul's interview. So do you want to kick us off with a little bit of a how's Voitanos going? Where are you at with that? We know we got some comments in our competition about waiting for your course, so do you want to let everybody know where you're at with this and what they can expect?
Absolutely, yeah. So this is going to be, I guess I have 2 or 3 little updates with this. They're fairly small, but as a recap, I said, I guess, last October, November, or sometime around then in 2016, that I was going to start doing this new training business, and the first course is going to be SharePoint Framework. And the idea was to get it out in the beginning part of 2016, and clearly that hasn't happened yet. And I'll have a more detailed post up at some point probably it will be out about the time that this episode goes live or later that week, because we record a week ahead of time. So this is, I plan on running this. I plan on doing a big kind of, hey, here's what's going on. But the gist of it was, is that let's just say that when you sit down to work on a course and the investment and everything, I had some unforeseen things kind of come up that having zero cash flow when you're working on a course, a video course, wasn't going to be able to take care of the unforeseen things. So I had to do a bunch of project work this year that, well, Frank, I had to pay the bills.
Life's getting in the way, man.
Yeah, it did. And it just kind of sucks. So, I mean, I did that, and that's really the main reason why there's been a delay. But thankfully, all that stuff is done. And so I'm now targeting at least a pre-release or an early release. It's probably going to be about 75% of the fundamentals course is targeted to be released toward the end of August of this year. So about a month and a half away from right now. So got a lot of stuff done, a lot of stuff recorded and coded and stuff, but I don't want to release. I want to do like one big push, and then I'll start doing little releases, maybe monthly drops after that for stuff. So people that have been asking about it, I appreciate it. It's coming. It's coming very, very soon. Trust me, I need to get this out because I need to see the revenue from it so I don't have to go back to do the project work again, or at least having the project work be the full-time stuff and the distraction for it. But it's coming very, very soon. Mm. The other thing, too, with this is that, you know, I noticed a blog post. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, like SharePoint framework stuff, was that I noticed the blog post from Chris O'Brien, a good friend of ours, and he did this post. It was like his wish list, his summer 2017 wish list for SharePoint development. And I've seen him do these in the past, and I've always really enjoyed reading them. And I thought, you know what, I got a handful of things that I want to highlight here that I want in the SharePoint framework that I haven't seen yet. So I took the time, wrote a post. It's live now. It will link to it in the show notes, where I've got my top seven things that I want to hear about the SharePoint framework that I want Microsoft to address. And some of them I don't think I'm going to win many friends in Redmond for, because it's one or two things I've been asking for since last December that I think are really big things, specifically like guidance around updating. Like here's a good one. So if you went and used the SharePoint framework today, it automatically includes React on the page. It includes the version of React 0.14.7. You guys use React and Hyperfish, so you may be familiar with that. It's a pretty old version.
Yeah. I actually don't know what version we're currently on, but I'd need to go chat with our team about that.
The most recent release of React, so again, the SharePoint framework is using 0.14.7. The most recent release of React from Facebook is 15. Something. So if you go back and you look at the timestamps, the version of React that's inside the SharePoint framework is about 15 months old. So, Jeez. Yeah. So I've got my number one item from them that I asked about was, you guys need to provide guidance for us so that we can know either I was going to say when you update it, but now I'm going to say, are you planning on updating it? And then if you are, how do we know ahead of time? How do we know when it's going to hit my tenant? How do I plan for this? Because all of a sudden, you know, React is a whole framework. And if there's something that is a breaking change, which, you know, those may happen over the course of a year and a half of updates.
Well, the longer you wait, right?
Yeah. Then it's more of an impact to me. And so how do I prepare for that? How do you communicate it? And they just haven't provided that guidance. And I think that's a big deal.
This is the modern version of their problem they've had with the .NET framework, yep, with full trust code, right? I vividly remember when I worked on the team in engineering that the number one ask or request, I should say, from developers was, when are you going to give me access to ... framework version number, right, mm-hmm, for full trust code? And the longer we left it, the more painful it got, because the biggest divergence between new things in the framework or backwards compatibility issues or all that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, the longer we left it, the more and more painful it got. And so it just sounds like a more modern version of that. But how do you fix that? Like, how do you go to an evergreen React version in a framework where multiple components on the page can share that dependency? Like, that's quite a tough problem to solve.
It is a tough problem to solve. And I personally don't care for React, okay? I'm just going to say that at first. And that's not, I'm not saying React is bad, but I personally don't care to develop.
You're an Angular guy.
I'm an Angular guy, yeah. I prefer, now, I mean, you can have the whole debate, does it make sense to build components using Angular inside of a SharePoint framework when you got this, you know, really Angular is a single page app framework and not a view implementation, which is what React is. We can have that debate, but let's just set that aside. I think that the only, really the best way to address it, first of all, from Microsoft's point of view, I don't know, they need to be able to update it and let people know, hey, that this is going to be coming out this week or next week or, you know, whatever, on a specific day so that we can all be ahead, we can be ready for it ahead of time. Goes out in first release tenants. There's a way for us maybe to switch the different versions that are on the page, or we can tell SharePoint, you know, which version do I want on the page. And Microsoft is responsible for building their own components that know how to work with either or, knowing which one's going to be on the page. And maybe that, you know, maybe they can't do updates as frequently as React, you know, releases stuff, which is once a month or multiple times a month. But they need to have a way for us to have, you know, it, maybe there's a quarterly drop or a 6 month.
I was going
to
say maybe a timed release kind of thing, maybe twice or three times a year or something.
Yeah, so we can snapshot and we can test our stuff against one of those things. And every time, but the farther we get, the bigger the deal it's going to be. Now, for me, it's one of the reasons why I'm not a fan of building stuff with React or the React components that they've given us, because I don't want to take that dependency. I want to be able to have the ability to say, which framework am I going to use and my components are going to use, and load those on the page. But, you know, then again, that doesn't really get cards on the table. That doesn't really solve a whole lot, because if I build some stuff with Angular 2 and I give it to a customer to use it and they hire somebody else and they build some stuff with Angular 4, technically those things should be just fine running side by side, but you can't have two different versions of Angular on the page. And so,
gotcha. You're in that hell anyway.
Yeah, you can't put that stuff there. I mean, you know, then again, it's an enterprise framework, meaning that it's made for enterprise developers, so you own the whole story. It's not really made for, like, for things that go in the store. So
yeah.
I don't know, man.
You have a bit more control over what goes on the page in theory.
Yeah, right now it's a bad story. And I think that they need, the one story that we can't have is we can't have the one we have right now, which is we're working off of a framework version that's a year and a half old. That's not acceptable. That can't be acceptable. And I can't understand how they would think it's acceptable.
Yeah. I bet I know what the answer to that is.
What is it?
I think I know what the reason behind that is. That'll be like, we've built all these new experiences. OneDrive's taken advantage of them. All the new UX is built on some of this internals and plumbing that we're giving for SPFX. And we can't just upgrade the version because that requires lots and lots of teams to test their stuff against the new thing. And that costs a lot of time.
You know, it's funny to hear him say, it would be funny to hear that said. But let me just give you one little bit of one data point. When they cut a new release with Angular, literally overnight, everybody inside Google who uses Angular, which is the biggest user of Angular is Google, their internal projects, they all are based off the master branch.
Mm, they get the new version.
They get the latest thing. Yeah. So when a new version gets cut, they're all using it. And so if they break the build or if they introduce a regression, they hear about it first from inside Google because it's bringing down things like they have a system called Green Tea, which is their CRM system, which is the biggest Angular app that's out there.
Mm.
They bring down Green Tea. And they can't do that with the Google CRM. That's kind of a big deal.
That's kind of a big deal, yeah.
So, I mean, to me, I'm not saying that React doesn't have that same quality.
What you're trying to say is suck it up and just get on the same page with the rest of the web world and do your job.
Pretty much, man. This is the way they wanted to go. I mean, they got to figure this out. But what we have right now is, it uncut it for me. I'm really frustrated with it, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that is annoying. And the problem's only going to get worse because it's going to get, you know, in terms of the divergence in the version from such a long time ago, the changes are so much bigger, right? Because you've got to consume so many more of them at the same time. It just ends up costing you more and more in the long term.
Yeah. So, okay, that's my Voitanos and that's my SharePoint framework kind of rant and update and stuff. So I'll put a link to my wish list in the show notes.
Really,
and
cool.
I'll also put the little, here's what you can expect, why the course is, and here's why the course is taking so long, posted there so people can tune into those.
Nice. Nice. And so people, in the meantime, they should go to your website, I'm imagining, and sign up for your mailing list.
Yes. Go to my website, you go to my blog, you can sign up, and I'll definitely be announcing it on my blog. But you really want to go to the voitanos.io website and sign up for the mailing list there and show your interest in the SharePoint framework. That course has a page where you can sign up for the list there to get updates on what's going on. So that would be my call to action. So,
nice.
But how about you at Hyperfish? What's going on over there?
Yeah, we're doing a lot, actually. It's coming up to mid-July. And we got to pick our booth at the Ignite Expo Hall late last week or early this week or something like that. It was pretty recent anyway. So we're sort of gearing up for our Ignite event or Microsoft's Ignite event coming up in late September 23rd or something like that, 21st, something like that.
Yep. Somewhere around there, yeah.
We're sort of warming up for that. We're a sponsor again this year, so we're going to have a booth. We're going to be right next to ShareGate this year, actually. We saw on the map, so they're always fun to hang out with, those guys. So we'll be booth neighbors on the expo floor.
Ah, very cool.
Yeah, so we've got a bunch of new things coming out for that, actually, that we're furiously underway on. Things like, I think I can talk about this. Oh, hell, why not? So, yeah, one of the things we're working on is, I don't know if anybody else is who's listening who's not familiar with Hyperfish, but we make it super easy for people to get their organizations to get their profile information up to date about their people. So you know how you go into Outlook or whatever and the contact cards have no information in them, no photos and all that sort of stuff, or SharePoint profiles have, don't have the right details in them, they're not up to date or they're old or what have you, or Active Directory or what have you. We help go do that and we'll make that really easy for to get it up to snuff. And so something we're working on is, in the past, we were only reading and writing from either Active Directory or Azure Active Directory. And then we had some features to also push the information into SharePoint profiles, like photos and stuff like that, if you wanted as well. But one thing we're working on is the ability to have certain pieces of a person's profile come from certain systems and go back to certain systems. So like you might have like manager and job title come from an HR system, but you might have like mobile phone just go back to the Active Directory. Or you might have photo, the system of record for photo be SharePoint. And when somebody updates it, you push it back to SharePoint, but you also push it back to Active Directory, an HR system or a custom line of business system, things like that. So we don't really have a good name for this yet, but like I sort of call it composite profiles, like a profile built up of information from a bunch of different places. It's not synchronizing that information all to one place. It's reading it from multiple places and then writing it back to multiple places that are obviously configurable by the customer. So that's probably something that'll be coming out for Ignite that is a big deal for us.
Oh, that's very cool, man.
Yeah, things are going well. We're onboarding new customers. We had a customer come on board last week who's a couple of thousand people, and within 2 days, 40% of their user base inside the company had added their photos, picked who their manager was, and updated their work phone number.
Oh my God, 40% on the first day?
40% within 48 hours.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Within the first 2 days. Wow.
Yeah, so 40% of their 2,000 and change people. And so that they were focused on those three fields, right? They really just wanted photos for people. They wanted to populate their directory with the org hierarchy, with the manager's relationship. Their AD was totally flat, had no manager direct report hierarchy in it. And they wanted their work phone numbers up to date so people could use like Skype, click to call and stuff like that. And they had us go focus on those three fields. They configured those, put some rules around them, said you've got to have a picture that's doesn't have adult content in it and all that sort of stuff. And you've got to have a work phone number that sort of adheres to this sort of pattern. And you also have to go pick a manager. And so, yeah, within 2 days, 40% of their people had updated those things and all written it back to their directory.
That's quite the testimonial or use case for your service. I mean, that shows that it works. I mean, right away, 48 hours, you got 40% of your directory has been updated. That's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, I don't have the statistics yet. I've got to go do some digging on how many of those people sort of initiated the process through the email that we send or through the bot, like the Skype bot notifications that we send them. So they turned on our Skype bot so we can reach out to the users over Skype for Business. And I got to run the numbers on what was the most effective channel for employee engagement. I'm pretty sure it'll be the Skype bot, but I don't have any numbers on that yet. But yeah, that was really cool to see. Great to see it improving people's profile information like that.
Yeah, that fast. That's really impressive, man. That's really cool. Congratulations. That's a very nice testimonial or win for you guys.
Yeah, we're going to get it written up and we're going to do a case study with these folks. So we'll get it all up on our site and things with lots more detail. But I just thought it was kind of cool, anecdotal kind of stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely. Cool.
Excellent. So that's a little bit on Hyperfish, a little bit on Voitanos, and a little bit about your SPFX wish list. We should really dive into the meat of the sandwich for this show, which we have a very special guest lined up that we interviewed, Paul Stubbs, who's We go back with Paul many, many years, right? He used to work in the what was now called the DX team. Actually, they've just renamed that team as part of the Microsoft reorg that we should dive into in another show. But Paul goes back in the SharePoint world quite a long way, and we've worked with him for many years. But now he's working on AI and all sorts of good stuff like that at Microsoft, and we've managed to sit down and talk with him about the world of AI and what's going on. And it's not something we've covered in depth on this show before, so we really wanted to get somebody who knew this stuff to come on and talk about it, and in particular, the Microsoft angle on this and how and where it's all going and what the landscape looks like. So we're really happy to have Paul on the show. How'd you feel about this interview? And I guess I took a lot away from it. I'm assuming you did too.
Yeah, I did. Like you said, we haven't spent a lot of time digging into this, nor really personally have I spent a lot of time digging into it, into how Microsoft presents this. I mean, I'm aware of, you know, cognitive services and the cognitive service toolkit and then what the competitive landscape is with TensorFlow and a couple other things from Google. What I like about this, I think this is the first of a handful of episodes that we're going to run on Microsoft's AI story. So in this one, the idea was to really just get an overview of what Microsoft's AI story is. And you'll hear Paul talk about, you know, three different pillars that they focus on. And we'll have different episodes where we'll dive into those three different episodes over the next, you know, couple months. But I found it really interesting to see, you know, not only to understand how they look at AI and how they want to be able to leverage it, but what Microsoft has already done so far and where they're kind of going with it. So you've got the underlying pinnings of a real low-level, hardcore data science toolkit SDK that you can use, but then they've used that toolkit to provide some services that are a little more abstracted to the developers for us to be able to take advantage of that inside of our apps, like bots or doing vision or doing object recognition inside with images or video and speech to text and stuff. That's the stuff that I think is really interesting. It's really cool to see the different things that Microsoft is coming up with for this stuff.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so without further ado, Paul Stubbs. What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. And it flows in and out of the tools you use every day. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever.
All right, today we have Paul Stubbs joining us from Microsoft to talk about artificial intelligence at Microsoft. Paul is a director of product marketing and AI and bots at Microsoft, educating and exciting customers and developers on how to create cross-platform intelligent experiences using Microsoft Cognitive Services, Machine Learning, Cortana, and the Bot Framework. Previously, Paul was a principal content publishing manager on the Microsoft Office Extensibility team that produces code-first samples, patterns, solutions, and documentation. Paul also served as the chief architect for Microsoft Services in the worldwide Azure Center of Excellence team. And you can get more on Paul from aka.ms/Paul Stubbs. So Paul, welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show.
Thanks, well, that was quite an intro.
I can tell you that you're the first one that we have interviewed, or at least that I've seen, that actually has their own aka.ms short link. So that's pretty badass, man.
He comes prepared.
That's awesome. So, and I guess that would be kind of cool too, because if you say like Paul Dash Stubbs, it screws up and it goes to defaults to Microsoft.com. So it's like going, yeah, this is my company. No, not really. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the aka.ms is a kind of an internal perk at Microsoft. They have their own sort of, you know, bit.ly service that they built. And so, you know, internally, we're able to create links and shortcuts. And so it makes it convenient to build things like a link to myself.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool. So, hey, we all three of us actually, we've worked together quite a bit in the past, not in the topic we're going to talk about today, but I guess you and I have worked together for many years building different training materials and content sessions. I guess we worked on the Metro program leading up with people learning the SharePoint stack and Office 365 stack and stuff. So you've switched over into doing stuff on the artificial intelligence side. So why don't you, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've been up to lately before we start diving into the topic of the day, what we're going to cover in our interview.
Yeah. So, you know, AI has really been this interesting topic that's been kind of bubbling in the industry and really taken off over the last year or so. And Satya has been talking about AI, and Microsoft's been doing AI for a long time. But when you looked at the Microsoft organization, you know, there was Windows and Office and Azure, but there was no sort of official AI thing, right? Well, recently, earlier this year, they did a big reorg where they created a new organization under Harry Shum, which is an organization called AI&R for Artificial Intelligence and Research. So now we have an organization of 13,000 engineers building AI, focused on AI, and doing AI stuff. But there was no marketing side to that, so they created a marketing team, and so I was basically I was either the first person or the second person on the team, depending if you're base zero or not.
I think in this context, we have to go with base zero, so I'll take you as a first person.
So basically, I was the first person on the team. We're now a team of three people, three marketing people, technical marketers, for this giant organization of engineers. And so we have our hands full of trying to keep up and to showcase all the cool things that they're doing.
Awesome. Yeah. So, and you're doing a lot of stuff. I know the other people that are on your team too, some other names that some of our listeners may be familiar with. I think Sonia Koptev joined you guys as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And we also have another person on our team that came over from the Cortana Intelligence side. His name is John Paolo. And he's really, and we're kind of dividing up the work that we're doing. So even though all three of us are doing everything, you know, Sonia's focusing on more of the deep learning side, things like the cognitive toolkit and machine learning. I'm focusing on the conversational side, which is, you know, bots and Cortana and a little bit of cognitive services. And then Gianpaolo's focusing on cognitive services. And so we're kind of dividing and conquering the space to some extent. But since we're such a small team, we end up doing a little bit of everything.
Awesome. So, you know, I know this is the first interview that we wanted to do with you guys, with your team, around the artificial intelligence story for Microsoft. So when we say AI in the rest of this episode, we're going to be referring to the artificial intelligence stuff. In this episode, what we want to focus on is kind of getting an overview on what AI means to Microsoft and what, like, the overall offering is. I guess we can look at this as maybe like the 200 level if we were looking at sessions at a conference. In future interviews and in future episodes that we're going to be working on with your team, including sitting down and talking to you, we're going to talk about those other areas around the artificial intelligence stuff, around deep learning, around bot framework, around cognitive services with the artificial intelligence story. So in this specific interview, we'll just cover an AI overview. But for our listeners, you know, we will be going deeper into a lot more stuff into these three different silos that we have in Microsoft AI. So the first question that you would have around artificial intelligence is, I guess, why is Microsoft doing this? Or, like, what is so interesting about doing this right now? Why is Microsoft really focusing on it? From what I see, you know, at the beginning, when Ballmer was around, when Steve Ballmer was around in charge of Microsoft, he always talked about Microsoft as a devices and services kind of a company, or at least that's what he was talking about in the later part of his CEO tenure. And then when Satya Nadella came in and took over for Steve Ballmer, he was talking about, you know, the cloud and everything being cloud and services based. But then over the last year-ish, maybe a little bit longer, you started to see Satya refer to it as the intelligent cloud. And so clearly AI is a little bit more important to Microsoft, or is a lot more important to Microsoft than Satya. So I guess I'll give you a chance to kind of tell us, you know, why is this important to Microsoft right now? What is AI to Microsoft and why is it important now?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think AI is interesting. You know, we think about at Microsoft, AI is really the opportunity for AI to amplify human ingenuity, right? AI is augmenting the things that people can do and the things that people have access to make them more efficient, make them more intelligent, make things better for everyone. And, you know, you think about AI all up. In the past, we would build computer systems and then we would teach users how to use those systems. Nowadays, it's the opposite. We're teaching the computers to understand us. We want the computers to understand what we see, what we hear, what we say, what we do, what our schedules are, right? It's not about us adapting to the computers. It's about computers adapting to humans now. And it's sort of a mind shift or a change in the way that we think about computing and we think about the things that AI can bring to us.
When you refer to AI, I guess, you know, the first thing that I started hearing about this, when you see, you know, Microsoft is working on it, Google's working on it as well, and then you start hearing the stuff that, like, the OpenAI project that Elon Musk is involved in, in among a bunch of others. This may seem pretty juvenile of a thing for me to say, but you know, the first thing I thought about was Terminator and Skynet and, you know, computers kind of taking over stuff. But the more I've looked at it, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about more, you know, computers are teaching them how to learn, to be able to provide better insights, to be able to do things like take a bunch of pictures and say, I guess looking at one of the sessions you guys did at Build, taking a bunch of pictures of leaves and telling it, this is a picture of a rhododendron, this is a picture of a pine tree, this is a picture of an oak tree, and then having additional pictures that you kind of classify with those things. And over time, the computer learns that based on different characteristics of the different leaves, it knows that this is different from A, is different from B, but it knows it's got a lot of samples that are like A that are all tagged as an oak tree. So it figures that out. So it's more or less trying to teach computer learn, not for it to kind of learn all on its own in a way and being completely agnostic from humans. So I understand why it's interesting to Microsoft and the value that it's going to add here. How do you guys kind of look at AI? How do you look at it from a, like what you're trying to provide for your customers?
Yeah, so we're thinking about AI in a number of categories. We generally four buckets that we're thinking about right now. And you know, we start off with intelligent agents, right? Cortana being at the center of that, right? And how can Cortana, as an intelligent agent, have information about you and bring together a conversational interface on top of that agent for you? So, for example, it's not about just having a one-to-one kind of interaction with an application, but it knows things about you. It knows your preferences. It knows your schedule. It knows where you work and where you live and how you go and what modes of travel you take. And so it can say things like, oh, I see you have an appointment downtown Seattle at 5 p.m. and I understand it's raining and the traffic is backed up on the 520. And so I suggest that you leave now, right? And so the intelligent agent is able to bring together all of those services and be extended to provide that kind of agent, you know, like a personal assistant for you, right? And so that's one sort of pillar that we think about.
Gotcha. So for those of our listeners who are kind of completely new to AI and are wondering, you know, what is all this stuff about? It seems it can be pretty overwhelming. It's a topic that in the past has been dominated by seriously geeky researchers with PhDs writing code that nobody else understands or can read. For the average developer out there, what's the simplest thing that they can do to just to help grok some of these concepts and get started with a super simple example that just really shows, you know, some of the basics of what would be possible and what you guys are doing around making this stuff accessible to the general developer audience out there?
Yeah, I mean, I get that question. I mean, every time we talk about this for every audience, we sort of get that question, like, there's just so much stuff out there. Where do we even begin? And yeah. I think the first place to start with is think about, I have an application or a solution or something that exists already, or maybe it's something new, and I want to make that thing intelligent or smart, right? And so the first step would be, I'm going to use the Microsoft Cognitive Services. The Microsoft Cognitive Services are a set of 29 pre-built models that are hosted on Azure and Microsoft that you can call as a developer using simple REST calls from any language. So that's things like Andrew was talking about earlier about vision and the leaves, about having the ability to detect objects and images in those objects and custom speech and knowledge and search and translation and those things. And these are just services. I don't need to know anything about AI. I just need to be a developer that can make a REST call and it's pay-as-you-go. It's a very traditional Azure kind of model, and it becomes very easy. And then I can go to the next step, which is like, hey, okay, I want to add some conversational aspects to that application, so I'm going to use the bot framework to add a conversational interface on top of whatever business logic I have already, right? So then there's that. But at some point you say, okay, that's good, but I want to do something special. I want to do something different or unique to my company. I'm going to go to the next level down and use things like machine learning and use machine learning and the Azure machine learning to build my own models, bring my own data, and generate some machine learning model that I can consume. Like, you know, maybe I'm looking at patterns in healthcare claims, right? And I want to use a model for. That wouldn't be a general purpose model that you'd find in cognitive services, but it'd be something you could easily build with machine learning. And then you say, well, okay, maybe that's not enough. I want to go to the next level down and use the cognitive toolkit. And in that case, you're sort of in the rocket surgeon category. You're building your own neural networks. You're bringing your own data. You're uploading it onto a massive number of computers and GPUs to run your models. And you own everything end to end, but you get the full power of AI, if you will, right? But you need to have the data science background, and you need to be, you know everything about everything at that point to do that. So that's a lot of stuff. But what we're seeing, though, is if you think about cognitive services on one side, which is easy to use, I don't need to know that much, and then cognitive toolkit on the other end of the spectrum where I need to know everything, what we're doing is working to make cognitive services customizable, more powerful. So we launched a few things at Build, which is like custom vision service where I can upload my own images to train the model or upload speech to train my own speech model. So making cognitive services more powerful and customizable. And then on the other end, making cognitive toolkit more approachable and easier by doing things like making it easy to host the endpoint, making it easy to run your model and train your model and massive number of GPUs. So you see those two sides of the spectrum working their way together, and that's sort of a general kind of approach we're trying to take.
So the spectrum of those steps won't be quite as lumpy, I guess, eventually making the decision to go from one to the next to the next. It'll sort of be a much more seamless transition in terms of bit more power at the easy end and a bit more ease at the powerful end, and sort of smoothing out those lumps by the sounds of it.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, and it's a good way to get your feet wet, because I can just say, hey, I just want to be able to do automatic text translation in my application. That's a simple REST call. I don't need to build any AI, stuff to do that. I want to recognize images that I upload. I don't need to do any AI stuff to do that. I just call the endpoint. But then there's some points where I can say, I want to build my own models, and the extra work that you put in to do that is value add for your company, right? Because now that gives you a competitive advantage for your company that you've designed that nobody else can do, right? And so you can either think, hey, we built this model and we know how to do this thing. We can diagnose engine repair faster than anybody else. That could be your competitive advantage by building your own models. Or you could sell that service and make money as a provider of that service to others. And so it opens up new business models for companies to explore.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I mean, it makes it much the entry level to get in to be able to take advantage of this from both a company point of view and also as a developer. It makes it very appealing and very approachable. So that someone like, let's just say someone like me who doesn't spend a lot of time with AI and knows about all the, neural nets and all that kind of stuff and the science behind it, it can take advantage of the services you guys are offering. And it's like the vision, the speech, Lewis, and Video Portal, and the other ones that you're adding as well, that's giving me almost kind of like a PaaS kind of experience to where I don't have to understand the entire infrastructure of how everything works and training the models. But if I'm a data scientist, if I'm coming from, doing deep research and trying to do things, like you said, figuring out how to repair engines, or I'm trying to go through and do something about rocketry or whatever it ends up being, then I have the ability to go through and to build and train those networks and be able to take advantage of those same services to, in a sense, build the same services you guys are building, but are more specific for the workloads that I'm trying to solve, my own industry, my own company, etc. So that's a cool offering. When you're talking a little bit too about being able to take AI and being able to infuse it into custom applications that I'm building today, what kinds of things are you guys seeing, or what kinds of tools are you providing people that they have access to today?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, that you were saying you were able to build using the same tools that we do, and that's exactly what we're doing at Microsoft, right? We've instructed all the engineers across all the product lines to infuse AI into all of their applications. And so you can see a bunch of that work today. For example, in PowerPoint, when you drag an image into your PowerPoint slide now, it will automatically add the alt text to your image. So it says like, hey, kittens on the beach, right? And so you get the accessibility of that. There's also a new add-in for PowerPoint for doing translation. So what happens is you add this to your PowerPoint slide, and then it automatically, as you talk, will translate into any number of a dozen different languages. So everybody in your audience can real-time be translating into, Russian as you talk. or they can use Microsoft Translator on their phone to join that presentation and listen in whatever of the 100 languages that they want to do it. So even though you're talking in English and you're showing the transcription on the slides in Russian, they could be listening on Spanish and even interact and ask questions in Spanish back to me and so on and so forth. So it's a way for you to really reach a very diverse crowd of people and for them to participate. And lots of other examples, things like the Focus Inbox in Outlook is an example of how we're using AI, right? Which is sort of like, you know, think about that as like junk mail for your friends, right? So it's sort of a way to, you know, to just show you the people that you interact with on a more frequent basis, right? And so it's a way to kind of get that inbox. And so that's kind of uses AI behind the scenes. Or, you know, today you may not notice when you're typing in Word, in the old days you used to misspell the word the, right? And it would put a little squiggly line under it and say, hey, you spelled this wrong. Nowadays, your spelling hasn't gotten better. It just automatically corrects it for you as you're going along. You don't even realize all the words you're misspelling potentially, right? That it's just fixing the things because it says, hey, I know the context of the sentence. I kind of know what you're trying to type, and most likely you were trying to do this word, so I'm not even going to bother telling you, right? Which is a huge problem we have today that AI can solve for us, right? This idea of what we call alert fatigue. Alert fatigue is when you're just so overwhelmed with all the information coming at you, you know. Like, think about when you install a new application on your phone and it asks you, do you want to allow notifications? No, like, no, please, no more information. And AI is really about that, right? So it's like, hey, it's midnight, I'm lying in bed, don't tell me the garage door is open, just close it, right? You know all the context and it can make these decisions for you. You have things like, I know that you're going to be home at 5 o'clock and I know what time sunset is and I understand it's cloudy and I can suggest that you turn the lights on when you get home, or I could just turn the lights on for you, right? It's this idea that AI is going to simplify and make these decisions based on the information it has. And really it's about, when you think about when you're creating bots, when you think about AI, it's about synthesizing large amounts of information. Back in the day when you used to search the web and you'd get back, you know, millions of cat videos, and you were like, wow, this is really great. And now you're like, no, just show me the one cat video that's important to me and, like, filter out all the rest. And so that's really the goal of AI, to get me down to that one right answer from vast amount of data that's out there.
So it's interesting, you, like, some of the examples you gave. I mean, the one about the PowerPoint translator, I know that Yin Arenas did that demo at the first day of Build this year. So we'll make sure that we have that, a link to where you can jump straight to that part and see that demo from day one of the keynote. We'll have that in the show notes. One of the other things you talked about too is, you know, about the how it automatically, you know, replaces the text for you, suggests the text. And it's funny to see, like, kind of how, I don't want to say that AI is growing up, but it's almost like our usage of AI is growing up to where it's not just about, hey, I can change that word for you that you misspelled the and you did H-T-E again instead of doing T-H-E. So I'll go ahead and fix that for you automatically. But it also is watching words that you constantly misspell or you consistently misspell. And instead of, like, the intelligence going through and making the change for you, but if you go back and rechange it, it's learning over time going, oh, that's not a misspelling. I got a classic case where I've done that when we first started having, like, the auto-complete or auto-suggest stuff happening on phones where my son's name is Steven. His initials are SDC for Stephen Daniel Connell. So I sit there and text my wife and I say, hey, I'm picking up SDC from school. And of course, before that, even looking at it, my phone recorrected it and said, I'm picking up sex from school. And, you know, my wife responds back, goes, okay, great, I'll see you in 15 to 20 years. I mean, it's like, oh, that's not what I meant. Now, when I do that, though, it actually learns over time going, oh, no, he actually does mean SDC and not the other thing, right? So, yeah, you can see it's like kind of how we're actually, you know, the AI is getting a little more sophisticated, but we're getting also more sophisticated in learning how to use it, how we can take advantage of it. I want to transition a little bit here and talk a little bit about some of the services you guys have to offer, kind of like from a high level. And when I first started looking at this, you know, it was explained to me that Microsoft's AI story really kind of falls into a couple different pillars. The one of the ones that comes up is the cognitive services piece. So you talked a little bit about what cognitive services is here, but can you tell us a little bit more about, from the gist of it, what is cognitive services? And then maybe what are some of the new things that you guys announced recently at the Build conference in the last month or so?
We talked about cognitive services being a set of pre-built models that are available as simple services. You can go out to azure.com/cognitive and see all of them, and each one of them will have a link to join a trial experience where you can sign up for a key that will give you access to it. But they're all pretty much a combination of a REST endpoint that you will call to perform some action. Some of them will have companion sites that will allow you to augment the system and do things on the website. So, for example, one of the ones that we've launched at Build Custom Vision Service allows you to upload your own images. So, for example, the vision service is one of the cognitive services, and it allows you to upload a photo, and it says, you know, that's a car, that's a puppy in the park, that's, you know, a tree. But it doesn't know pumps in your factory or, you know, machine parts that are in your company. And so without going to the next level that we talked about earlier, building your own models and train your own neural network, you can just simply take pictures of the objects you wanted to recognize and upload them with as little as 5 images per object. You can train the model to do that. So, for example, I want to teach the system to recognize Star Wars figures. So I could upload images of Yoda and Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker, and then now it will train the model. So when I upload an image, it says, hey, that's Darth Vader, that's from season, you know, the 4th episode, and you can do that with the system by saying, here's a picture of Darth Vader, here are the tags that I want associated, so when you see this again, or something that looks similar to this, tell me the probability that it's some of these tags. So it'll say, like, 99% probability it's Darth Vader, 50% probability it was episode 4, and, you know, whatever the tags are, right? And so it becomes very easy to train and customize your model that way.
Very cool. So I know another one of the services you guys have that is I'm calling it pillars. I don't know if that's the right term that you guys use. But one of the other ones that I know is a big piece to what you guys have to offer is the bot framework. So can you tell our listeners a little bit? I mean, we had Richard Dezerga on a couple, I guess, weeks or months ago, and he touched on it a little bit when we talked about some teams development and talked a little bit how they were using bots. But I know it's a much bigger thing than just Microsoft Teams. So you talk about a little bit about what the bot framework is, and, you know, what's new from about the bot framework that you guys announced at Build. What kind of new things that people should be aware of?
Yeah, so the bot framework is a way for you to build conversational interfaces and surface those conversational interfaces, which we call bots or chat bots or whatever terms you guys want to use, and surface those chat experiences in a number of channels. Those channels are things like Slack or Skype or Teams, right? You can surface those bots as agents in those. And at Build, what we've done is we've announced 3 new channels. So support for Bing, and I'll explain that in a second, and then Cortana. So now when you build a Cortana skill, the way that you build Cortana skills are simply creating a bot in the bot framework and then just click a button to turn on the Cortana channel, and you now have a conversational bot, which we call skills when they're in Cortana. And then the last one, which was one that a lot of people have been asking for a long time, including your co-host, the Skype for Business support. So now,
you heard about that, huh? Did I bug enough people? Seems like it, because it just arrived. Maybe you should have called it the Shut CJ Up channel.
Did it work?
Yeah, pretty much. No, now I've just transitioned on to wondering why I can't do cards and buttons in Skype for Business. But I mean, I know the answer to that, but I'm just going to bug a different team about that.
Yeah, so the channels, like, so for example, Skype for Business is an important step forward to bringing bots into the enterprise. Cortana is an important step to bring the conversational interface and how we think about bots and agents and intelligent agents and across multiple modes. So whether you're, you know, and we're really one of the only companies, I think Amazon, even though, you know, they are as far as they are ahead in things like Alexa and Google Home and others, I think we're really the only company that's thinking about it more holistically in terms of whether you're talking or typing or touching things on the bot or the images. We think about that, all of those modalities when you're building bots, right? So it's not only about text. It's not only about talking, right, like an Alexa, but it's about how can I build a bot that is able to respond and adapt, if you will, to all of those modalities of the host and make it easy. Because when you think about it, natural language interface doesn't always mean text. Sometimes it's more natural to choose an image or to pick something from a drop-down than it is to explain it in voice or typing something, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
One of the things that I noticed from the bot framework that was discussed around Bill was that you guys, it went from, I haven't spent much time with the bot framework, so forgive me if I'm a little off here, but there was something about a new version, a version two of the runtime, like something changed along as far as like the underpinnings of the bot framework. Can you talk a little bit about like what that is or what that meant?
Well, so some of the things in the runtime that are happening, and we haven't released them yet, but we were talking about them to some extent, is how do we make the runtime more efficient? So one of the things we've done is we've, as part of the work of bringing Cortana, truly wired, if you will, speech throughout the concept of the bot framework. So it inherently, at a fundamental level, knows how to deal with speech and voice and that sort of thing through the system, right? So that makes it easier. But also the runtime being tightly coupled with other services, in particular other cognitive services like Lewis, which Lewis is the language understanding service. And even though Lewis is one of the cognitive services that you could call from any application, one of the core kind of use cases is that it's able to understand and be the engine for your bot, for example. So when you build a bot, the main premise of a bot is to basically take something I said, which we call utterances, so what did I say, convert that to an intent, which is a function call, and then how to do that mapping is the job of what Lewis does for you. So I can say in a bot, I can say, turn on the light. I could resolve that utterance, turn on the light, using a simple regex expression. But what happens is when I have all of the variations of what how someone may say that, that's when I really want to rely on Lewis to do that for me, right? So when I say turn on the living room light or turn on the bedroom light, now Lewis can pull out those properties of that intent. So understand not only the intent, but understand the variables within the intent and understand all sorts of ways to say that, that's the power of what Lewis provides for me. And then, so by tightly coupling those together, we get the performance of having them co-located, so to speak.
Could it even understand the Pacific Northwest's passive aggressiveness when it comes to turning on light switches and say, oh, I really wish it was slightly lighter in this room instead of just turn on the light, right? Because if you were doing it with a regex, turn on the light's pretty straightforward, but oh gosh, I wish it was a little bit lighter in this room is a little bit harder to parse with a regex to get intent. But it sounds like you could train a model to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you can add as many sample phrases if you want to. And you don't. The thing is great, you don't have to be perfect, right? That's the whole point. Just give me a few examples, and it will extrapolate all the variations that it understands around that as well. And, you know, it has built-in understanding for things like dates and locations and stuff like that. So you don't necessarily have to teach it all of the spaces and entities that you're trying to resolve.
Yeah, gotcha. Say your application, you start with some cognitive services, you get some image recognition and maybe some text in, or intent from text or something along those lines, crack it along. And then you want to go a little off the deep end on that spectrum that we were talking about earlier on around learning in a bit more, excuse the pun, but deep way. At Build, or just before Build, I believe, you guys released the new thing called the Cognitive Toolkit. Can you briefly explain how that relates to cognitive services? Is it the thing that really that you guys use to build cognitive services under the hood, and it's something that people can now leverage themselves? And then what are some examples of where you would need the toolkit versus maybe just using one of the out-of-the-box services?
The Cognitive Toolkit is the thing that was formerly known as CNTK. You may have heard that term. So CNTK and the Cognitive Toolkit is our deep learning system for building models and neural networks, right? You could think of this as the competitor to this, which is TensorFlow from Google, for example, or Caffe2 that Facebook talked about, right? This is our version of those systems, right? And so we just went GA with this recently. So you're able to take this and run this. And we announced at Build the ability to take these models, whether it's Cognitive Toolkit or TensorFlow or Cafe, and run them in a massively parallel way in Azure using Azure GPUs and have sort of an infinite scalability of that, right? But you know, one thing I say about Azure, and so even though Azure is infinitely scalable, most of the time your credit card is not. And so you want to, you know, think about the balance between the number of machines you wanted to take onto a problem and how do you do that. But that's available to you, right, and to be able to run that. And then to your second question, which is about when would I do this? You know, we see a lot of examples like, I want to do precision farming, for example. I want to take satellite images and analyze the images that come in from the satellite to determine crop yield or irrigation capabilities or fertilizer effectiveness and this stuff. I think that's an example. Another one that we're doing a lot of work in is the healthcare space, right? Things like cancer detection or X-ray scans and things like that, where it's really about, you know, we talked about AI augmenting humans, right, not replacing them, and so that it's never going to be the AI detecting cancer or just the doctor detecting cancer, but it's the combination of the doctor and AI together. That is what we see as the future of, you know, the power of AI. It's right. It's helping people make better decisions and giving them better information.
Gotcha.
Very cool.
Yeah, nice. I see. So if you want to dive in on really highly customized models and the ability to tweak and adjust sort of every lever along the way, then the toolkit is something you're eventually going to want to get into by the sounds of it.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, there's a steep learning curve, right? There's this data science kind of thing you have, and we're working hard to make that easier, to unlock that power, you know, to really bring AI to every developer is our goal. That's our mission right now for the foreseeable future. Is like, how and what can we do to bring AI to every developer? And that means helping them understand how to build neural networks, how to run them, make them easier for them to host, right? We want to bring that power to the normal developer, if you will, right?
Gotcha.
I see. This has been very useful. I mean, I think that one of the things we wanted to accomplish in this interview with you and sit down with you was to get a good idea of, you know, what artificial intelligence was to Microsoft, to get an idea of the three different pillars and just kind of from a high level view. What we're going to do in a couple of future episodes, as I mentioned in the beginning, is that we're going to go into these three different areas that we touched on between cognitive services, the bot framework, and the deep learning aspect to it. We're going to dive into these in a little bit more depth and have dedicated interviews on those. So for our listeners, if you're interested in this stuff, you know, stay tuned over the next few weeks. You're going to hear us talk to some other people on Paul's team, including Paul, who's going to visit with us about the bot framework. But we'll talk to Sonia as well and get Gianpaolo in here as well to talk more about these areas. So before we dive into the picks, I want to just take a second and give a little shout out to one of our sponsors here for helping us make this show possible. So let's just do that for just a quick second.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. If you're interested in all things happening at Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, Power BI, SharePoint, or .NET, look them up on valid.nl.
All right. So, Paul, this is the time of the show. What we usually do is we sit down and we do a thing called picks. And so I know we've talked a little bit with you in the past, but you know, it's really anything that you can find interesting. It's either, you know, what you're reading, what you're watching, cool bit of tech, something totally unrelated, maybe just be funny, something funny, funny YouTube video about cats on that you've found recently. But well, I'll let you kind of steal the thunder here and trump CJ and I and share with us what your pick is for today.
Yeah, so one of the things I'm reading this book called Rise of the Robots. It's about technology and the threat of a jobless future. It's by Martin Ford. And it's an interesting book. It was written, you know, recently, you know, within the last couple of years, but it really tries to address this anxiety that I hear from people, especially people that are just hearing AI for the first time. You know, I think you mentioned at the very beginning about the Terminator scenario, right? And, you know, me as someone that's really passionate about technology, as all of us are, I don't see that issue. So helping me understand, you know, what are the issues, what are making people anxious about the future of technology and AI, and how can we help them understand that, you know, the things we're building are really going to help humanity, and how we can apply that in that aspect, and that the goal isn't harm, but it's really to do good here.
Awesome. That's a really good one. That's something that I struggle with as well. When, you know, you try and explain this stuff, it may not be something that's a concern to me, but it's a concern to other people, and helping at least be able to see what the best way is to kind of talk to those people to kind of bring them off the ledge, or so to speak, that helps. So that's cool. I know I was taken back by the fact you were holding a paper book. So I didn't know what that was for a second. I thought that there was a weapon. So I was looking for, yeah, there you go. So, Rise of the Robots. It's a cool cover too.
Wow, nice. That's a real book. Did you pick that, or did an AI pick it for you, Paul?
my so digital agent picked it for me.
Yeah, today your digital agent is teaching you about that it's okay to deal with robots. That's cool. Something in that.
Mr. Johnson, do you have a pick for us today?
I do, on something completely unrelated. You know how we're all geeks and we sit at desks for hours and hours and days and days and years on end? Mm. Well, have I got the tool for you, my friends? It's called the Gideon Sports Robust Trigger Point Self-Therapy Massage Stick. 11 pointed and rounded knobs for deep tissue massage results. Myofascial release tool simulates massage therapist's hands. And my God, it's like got the strongest thumbs you've ever had digging into your back in your life. It is marvelous. It's $25 on Amazon, and it's basically this big plastic stick with a whole bunch of knobs on it that mean that you can release pressure points in your back without sort of rubbing up against a wall or doing anything weird with your coworkers. So highly recommended.
This is a family show.
Yeah. Well, I've got a funny story.
Clearly, you're a new listener.
When this thing arrived at work, everybody looked at me with a very strange look, because it does look like something you might find in some dodgy B&D den somewhere. I mean, it's pretty rough.
I thought we taught you never to cross the streams.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, now you could just wield this thing and everybody will pay attention, because it looks like some sort of torture device. But it is fantastic. If you have back problems or neck issues or neck tension or whatever, and you're a computer geek, sit at a computer for hours on end, I highly recommend this thing. It does make you look slightly weird at work, but you'll love it.
I am not.
So I can expect the demonstration video in the show notes later?
I'll give you a private show after this, yeah.
I'm terrified now to wonder what the AI is picking for you these days, CJ.
Yeah, you should see my suggested purchases on Amazon. Oh, my.
I did one purchase one time, and then just the way that we're going totally off subject now, but I did one purchase one time, and all the suggestions that started coming in, like, no, that was a present for somebody else. That wasn't for me.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
It was for a friend. All right. So I'm going to
start. That brings up I don't know if I can just interrupt you. That brings up an interesting question as we go back into the show for a second. You know, we have this custom decision service that does basically what the like on Amazon does for you. And it's quite an interesting point where it's, you know, how do we pick choices for people, but then not silo them into one category, right? Like if your daughter picks, you know, a cartoon, that doesn't mean I only want to watch cartoons. And how does the system do that? And so that's it's an interesting problem to solve, that the custom decision service helps you make those kind of things. But it's an interesting AI problem to solve, even though, you know, we're seeing the results of that today.
Yeah, it's always struck me as, how do you unteach an AI? That's the interesting part, right? It keeps learning, but I want it to unlearn a couple of things.
And I think it adapts over time, right? And just as it, you know, learning is, it's not unlearning, it's just learning that you don't want to do that anymore, right?
Yeah.
It just kind of relearns your new preferences. But I mean, that whole space, again, is part of current services, but it's part of the whole AI lots of practical terms here, not to jump back onto the show, but we...
Yeah, if you could teach Netflix that I'm no longer interested in Barney the Dinosaur, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's the negate property.
You click one video, you're a Barney the Dinosaur fan for life. Anyway.
All right, so I have one pick, and this is kind of going a little bit back to the show and from the pseudo-porn thing that CJ was going with.
That escalated quickly.
So I'm going to switch over to a Lego, shocker. This week, my Saturn V rockets did show up. But what's cool about this one is this is called the Creative Toolbox. So what this is you can essentially, you bring a Lego thing to life. What it is, it's a set of about 840 some odd pieces, plus a little like move hub and an interactive motor with a color sensor and a distance sensor. It's a lot like that one that we used to have. I'm trying to remember what it's called. I've got one on my shelf here, but the old little robots that we could program with Lego. And what's neat about this is that it uses Bluetooth and it has a tablet-based app that you can use to go teach it how to move and teach it how to do different things, how to tilt, how to do things when it sees different colors or when things are within a certain distance around it and stuff. And it also functions, that little color sensor also functions as like a light that it can do. So what's neat about it is you can actually program it to do a bunch of different things and to behave independently of whatever the program is that you've built. So kind of like a little, it's a cool little toy thing, but a little bit of intelligence built into it to let you kind of, you know, play with stuff. So it's a cool little.
Yeah, that looks awesome.
Yeah. So I'll make sure to put that in our show notes as well so people can take a look at that.
Excellent.
Well, awesome. Hey, Paul, thanks a lot for taking a few minutes here to sit down with us and talk about, you know, Microsoft's story with AI and what their offering looks like going forward. Looking forward to sitting down with you and interviewing doing another episode where we'll talk to you about the bot framework in an upcoming episode. So I guess with that, thanks a lot for joining us today, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks
a lot, Paul.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.